Okay.
Yeah, you told me.
Okay, so we are holding on Lamed on the Bays by the Mishnah.
You bought seltzer with you from the house?
Huh?
You mean seltzer?
Seltzer?
Yeah.
What about seltzer?
You mean seltzer?
Yeah. I don't know what you're talking about.
Start letting our supply next week, I guess. All right, so we are holding on Lamed on the Bays by the Mishnah. Mishnah says, Ezehi Aveda. What is the definition of an Aveda? And now the Gemara is going to ask, and then we've just been going through a whole parak that's been giving us the definition of Aveda, so we'll see. Well, you know what? In and of itself, you notice sometimes you have Masechtas and Prakim when they introduce a new din. A lot of times they start off with kind of the oddball cases and then finally get down to the actual, you know, the basic
issue,
sort of. Yeah. I can tell you. I mean, the Rambam usually gives the basic principles first, but. I mean, I can tell you as an extreme example, and then let's get back to the topic. But for example, Masechta Machshirim, which is all about the dinim of how something is mukshel the kabel truma and what's not, it takes till the last or next to last mishnah in it to tell us what are the actual seven liquids that are mukshel the kabel truma. We would think that should be the first thing.
Right.
Okay.
Anyway. Why is it like that?
The Pashtus, I would say, because originally the mishnah was only written down, was only composed and then written down because people were forgetting Torah Shabbat Peh. So the Pashtus, when they had to start writing, they didn't have to start writing the basic things. Like, everybody knew what the seven liquids are. They didn't have to write it down. So they started with the oddball cases. Later on, eventually, when it came, it had to be written down. So Torah Shabbat Peh is not forgotten. Then they had to add the basic facts as well.
I understand. But Aveda, everybody knows.
Well, that's what we're going to get to. Wait. So Motza Chamor et Poro Royin Baderech, you're going to see it. It's not so simple. If you see a donkey or a cow grazing by the side of the road, ain't do aveda. That's not considered a lost thing because you can assume the owner put it there deliberately. Actually, Rashi versus Tosfos have slightly different takes on it. Is it that the owner put it there, or is it that the owner knows that it's there? Meaning, it may have what happens, for example, the owner put it there l'chatchila, but then he forgot about it. That would make a difference between Rashi and Tosfos' understanding of it. Okay. Chamor v'kelev afuch. And on the other hand, for example, you see a donkey with its gear, like a saddle or whatever, overturned, like sideways, like a saddle is on its side or on its belly instead of on its back. Or pora rotza ben akramim. Or you see a cow running around among the vineyards. Harezu aveda, then that's an aveda, because the owner has no idea that it's there. Continues the mission.
Presumably,
yeah. Hechziro barcha, hechziro barcha. What happens if you return the animal and then it ran away again, and you returned it again and it ran away again? Afila barcha chamisha pam, even if it's four or five times, or the Gemara is going to say even much more than four or five, but that's the style in the Mishnah a lot of times, it's used four and five indefinitely like that. Chayev lachziro, you still have to return it over and over again. Shenem ha'hoshev teshivim. As the Pasuk says, return, you shall return them, which we'll deal in detail in the Gemara with this and a lot of other double expressions like that we have throughout Chumash. Interesting thing, by the way, that Tehoret Tzmima says on this, the chiddush of it is, you would think, now we learned back in Bava Kamma, for example, we also talked about it the other day briefly, that once an animal has gotten away from its usual place once, it's more likely to run away again and again, and therefore you expect the owner to take better care of it to make sure it doesn't run away. You would think, therefore, in a case like this, the Tehoret Tzmima says, the animal ran away and you returned it, but it's already used to running away. You would think, now it's up to the owner to make sure to guard it better, and if he doesn't, maybe it's an aveda midah. Maybe you don't have to be responsible anymore. No, you still have to be responsible. Because you don't know for sure. Maybe he did try to take care of it better. Maybe he did try to lock it up better, but it still got away, whatever. Continues the Mishnah. Hoya batal misela. What if this person, while he's busy returning the lost object, taking care of it and whatever, has lost a sela of wages? Normally he would be working during that time and earning a sela. Lo yomelo ten misela. He does not have the right to say to the owner of the lost object, reimburse me a sela. The reason is, Rashi says, because the other guy can counterclaim, okay, the fact of the matter is, you did a lot less work. It's true you would have earned a sell up for doing strenuous work, like this, taking care of my Aveda. Wasn't that strenuous? You can't say that you lost your full sell up.
That hour work, 2 hours work.
Right, but that's the thing. During that hour, for example, you would have been chopping wood, which is hard work. Like this, instead, you're returning an Aveda, which is easier work.
You can turn the argument around and say, in the same amount of time, that the owner of the shore would have lost much more
than the amount of
hours
that the...
Right. You can't say 10, but he has to give you something. What we do is the owner has to give you your wages like a worker. Now, what does that mean? Like a worker, we'll talk about in the Gemara, kapoyo bottle, where there's a few different explanations and we're showing him what it means exactly. So when we get to that part of the Gemara, we'll talk about
it.
So you're not giving him his full wages, but you're giving him something. We'll see. We'll deal with the formula in the Gemara.
It's weird because when you improve a field or a binyan for an owner, then you have to...
Then you're entitled to your full wages. The difference is here you're doing a mitzvah. You're doing a mitzvah.
The Bala of the Shur is gaining a lot from that.
Yeah, okay, he's gaining a lot. Now, the truth is, Tosfos talks about it at some length on Laman Aleph on the Bay, near the end of the Sugya. Tosfos talks about the fact we learned in a couple of places, we learned in Ksubas, among others, the concept, also in Gittin, the concept of Mavriach Ari Minichse Chaveri. If you have, for example, a lion that's near somebody's property and you chase away that lion, you're not necessarily entitled to any pay at all. Why is this guy entitled to some pay? And there's different answers, one of them being that they are the lion is only threatening to come, he or the owner was actually going to suffer a loss. Fine. You have to pay you something, but not your full wages. Not the full amount you would have been making during that time, because the fact is, taking care of an aveda is not particularly strenuous as compared to most kinds of work. So we'll say again,
reasoning, nobody's going to take care of other people's aveda.
They will, because they're going to get something out of it. Wait. Im yesh sham beistin masnim ifne beistin. Now, if there's a beistin there, if you have, so what if the person does want to get his full pay, he doesn't want to be bottled from his work. So if there's three people available over there who can constitute a beistin, masnim ifne beistin, fine. He can make a condition in front of beistin. Look, I make X amount per hour. I don't want to be wasting my time from my work to return the Saveda when I'm going to get any less. So therefore, I want to make a condition. I'm only going to take care of the Saveda and return it on condition that the owner is going to reimburse me the full amount.
When does he have to stipulate that?
If he wants to do that. Yeah, before he returns it.
But nobody's on the ground. I mean, they're sure.
Yeah, well, no, you have other people. Im yesh sham beistin. Im ein sham beistin. If there is no beistin available, there's no three people available. Bifnei mi yasne, then who are you going to make a condition in front of? Shaloi kodim. In that case, then your money comes first. As we learned yesterday, efes kiloi yivcha evyen, shalcho kodim l'shalcho adam, that yes, you're the fact that you're going to lose money out of it goes ahead of the obligation to return the other guy. Now, with that said, the Gemara is going to tell us at the end of the parak. The person is always particular about that kind of thing. I always need to make sure that I'm earning every dollar that I can and never going and returning an aveda. You'll wind up. You'll that's mina shamayim. In other words,
we don't paskin Torah mina shamayim.
That's the point. In other words, so that's what we're saying. You have the ability to make such a tnai if there's a beis din. If there's not, and on that basis you want to say, fine, I'm not going to return it unless I'm able to get reimbursed my full amount, fine, don't return it. If you don't make any such tnai, you're entitled to kapoyo bottle. As it's kapoyo bottle, as we'll talk about in the Gemara. We'll see. No, we'll see in the Gemara what the formula is. We'll have a few different explanations in the portion. So the Gemara starts up. Also called Hani Damrin and Lava Veda Habu. Everything that we talked about in this parak so far is not an Aveda. What do you mean Ezahi Aveda? As if we're introducing the concept for newly. What is the general kind of rule? What's the basic definition of an aveda where we see that it's there shaloi midas bailam, that the owner doesn't know that it ever was there, the owner doesn't know it is there now, whatever. What's the definition of an aveda? How do we know it's there without the das of the baal? For example, therefore the Mishnah continues. Which then you'd be chayav to deal with it. And therefore the Mishnah answers. If, for example, you see a donkey or a cow grazing by the side of the road, that's not considered an aveda, because we assume the owner knows it's there. And therefore you're not chayav in it. On the other hand, if you find a donkey with its saddle on wrong, part of or you find a cow running along among the vineyards, then you have to assume that it's an aveda because you have to assume the owner doesn't know it's there, and then you have to do hashavas aveda. Okay. Now the question comes like this: Ula olam. So what is the Mishnah telling us? If you see a cow or a donkey grazing by the side of the road, it's not an aveda.
Never.
I mean, so what if you see it grazing there every day for a month? At what point do you say the owners don't know it's there? It means up to 3 days. Different Rishonim talk about, does it mean 3 days and then on the fourth day if you still see it there it's an aveda, or does it mean already on the third day? Okay. So you might ask, hey,
why 3 days? If it's an aveda.
Right. Hey Chidami, what's the scenario? Why up is 3 days? If you see it there at night, afilo chodesh haitanami, then even you see it one time for a small amount of time, it should be an aveda. People don't normally have their animals grazing out at night. Ibi and mama, and if you always see it there during the middle of the day, after the turvanami lo, then even much more than 3 days. It's normal. You send out your animals every day to graze, and they come home in the evening.
Much more than 3 days.
So why would it be a difference?
Less than 3 days.
No, more. If it's during the day. If you walk by the same place every day and you see the animal grazing over there, right? Fine. Every day the animal opens up his barn, lets his animals out to go find forage or whatever in the forest and the whatever and in the open ground. No, it's not. No, it's fenced in where he keeps it at night. During the day, he may send it out into the meadows or whatever. Yeah,
but that's other people's
fields. No, not into other people's fields. Obviously, we're not talking about other people's fields. We said badera. We said by the side of the road.
But the side of the road of his property.
Somewhere near his property. Yeah, we're not talking. Okay. The answer is lo tzricha to have a chazal bekadmoso v'chashata. No, but the case in the Mishnah specifically, the case that Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav is saying 3 days, is when you regularly see it there 3 days in a row, very early in the morning, before Alois HaShachar, Uvach HaShachta, or after Tzeitzak HaChavim. So not in the middle, we're not talking about 12 o'clock at night, we're talking about like 4 o'clock in the morning or 8 o'clock at night.
Are we saying that if you saw it during the middle of the day,
then it would never be considered an Aveda, because you could assume, every day you could assume, no one who knows. So therefore, Tzlosa, you know, I mean, if it's up to 3 days, I'm reading this from Muryas Rami Levinachta. You could say, okay, it happened, punked, today the animal, the owner let out the animal early or whatever, so no big deal. Say, but if it's more than that, it's unusual to be letting it out that early, so many days in succession, or having it come back so late, in 3 days in succession, therefore, vade aveda. Therefore, at that point, we have to assume it really must be an aveda. Tani nami hochi, and indeed, we learn like that in a b'raisa. Motza talus v'kardum b'isratya. If you find, for example, a talus or an axe, on an Isratia, we learned the other day, and Isratia is a big, like an intercity road. It's actually distantly related. The word Isratia is related to the English word street. But it means more than just like a street, like Sterling Street or something. It means a big major road, yeah. Like Eastern Parkway or something, yeah. Or you find a cow running around between the vineyards, Tareza Aveda, and that is considered an Aveda, because we assume the owner doesn't know it's there. Talus b'tzad geder. On the other hand, if you find a talus near a fence, kordim b'tzad geder, or you find an axe near a fence, which Tosfos points out earlier in the perek, that either we're talking about over here is a mokum hamishtamer, that it's a place that's well guarded, that it's behind a fence, nobody is going to notice it, therefore leave it there because we can assume the owner put it there deliberately, or Tosfos says the other possibility is it could mean that maybe it's not such a makom hamishtamer, but it's normal for a worker to put his axe there for a while and then come pick it up. Which leads some mafoshim to say, by the way, that again, if you see it there more than 3 days, then already you should consider it an aveda. The guy may have forgotten about it. On the other hand, the Rambam doesn't bring that detail, and the mafoshim have a bit of a time explaining why the Rambam doesn't consider it. Anyway. Or if you see a cow grazing among the vineyards, grazing, not running, Ainzu Aveda, that's not considered an Aveda, because then we assume the owner knows it's there. There is a different girsa, by the way, that a couple of Rishonim have, that a couple of, again, up to the Pashtas, up to 3 days. Well, that's the Mishnah says. We're not the Pashtas, the Braisa says. Gimel Yomim Zeachazeh, but if you see it like that 3 days in a row, Hareizu Aveda, then it's an Aveda. So that's where Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav gets his 3 days. This part of Roya Ben Akromim, by the way, a number of Rishonim have a girsa instead, Ben Ha'asovim, that you see it grazing among the grass. Yeah, because if you see it grazing among the vineyards, that's a different issue. We're going to talk about that later on the Omer. Continues the Beraisa. Raw mayim sheshoit finuboy. And what if a person sees that water is flooding and then about to go into somebody else's field? Hareza goyder b'fneihem. Then he's obligated to put up a fence to block the water from, well, as fast as you can, whatever, to do something to try and prevent the water from flooding the other guy's field. Omar Rava, and in fact, Rava says, You should know that there is such a din because of the pasuk says l'chol avedas achicha. The pasuk says that you're responsible for any loss of your brother. L'ravas avedas karka. That comes to include a case like that where his field might be damaged by a flood or whatever, where you're obligated to do what you can to restore it to him to prevent it. So in fact, Rav Chananya says to Rava, Tanya de Messiah, yeah, this braisa that we just quoted could support you in that. We just said, Ra Maim Shashoit Pina Boim, is a good of a man. So you see, yeah, it's not just your own memra, your own drasha from the Pasuk. We see if there's an actual braisa. As a good of a man, you have to try and put up a fence to, or a dike or whatever to block it. The pashtus, I guess, it doesn't matter. It's coming from somebody else's rishus, then afterwards go over to that guy and tell him to take care of his nezek or whatever, yeah. So therefore, so Rava said it as an independent statement. Rav Hananya points out to him that you have a braisa that says the same thing, and therefore it's a support for you. Amalei, so Rava tells him, actually, imishumha, if that's all it is, just because of the wording of that braisa, loy tisayi mehacha. Actually, you cannot say necessarily that that braisa proves my point. Because hacha maya skinen could be the ikka omrin. Because when the braisa says more mind shoyt from the bone, that Rava says the braisa that you're quoting, the braisa that he just quoted, may be talking about a specific case, not where the land itself is going to be damaged by the flood, but where there are bundles of grain in it. So the bundles of grain, I'm a talpulin, obviously that's part of an aveda. So the question is, idi ikka omrin maylam mamra. Fine, if there are bundles of grain there, why does it need to be said? Of course, that's like any metalkalin that we know. When the Pasuk talks over there about Hashavas Aveda, the four things that it mentions, Shur, Kamur, Seh, and Salma, are all metalkalin. So yeah, Hashavas Aveda applies to any metalkalin. What does the Braita need to tell us? Because you have the word V'chol Aveda Sabecha. The answer is, yes, but the case we might be talking about, that Rava is saying, we're talking about where there's bundles of grain in there, is these are bundles of grain that still need the ground. For example, they're not 100% ripe yet. They're almost ripe, and therefore they were already bundled, so that when they'll finish ripening in a couple of days, you can just go start harvesting them, but they're not actually completely ripe yet, and therefore they still need to be attached to the ground a little longer. Lo tzricha, it wasn't only needed to be said in a case where there's omrin de tzricha la'ara.
It was needed
to be said, but only for that kind of case.
So what do we say?
That's what we're saying. Lo tzricha, it was not needed to be said, except, so you might think, since it still needs to be attached to the ground, maybe it should be considered like the ground itself. And that would be what the Braisa is telling us, that nevertheless it's considered metalkalin because it's almost ready to be harvested. You can't prove from that, though, Rava's point, which is you're talking about the damage to the land itself, where the land itself is going to be flooded and is going to be unusable for a long while. For that, you need Rava's limud from the Chalaveda Sakhita.
Can land be an aveda?
In that sense, yes. Because so that's the point. Actually, that's why Robert needs to tell us as a chiddush. The fact is, the land is not going to be permanently lost. Eventually, it'll be dry out and be fertile again. But it's going to be lost for a while. Unlike an aveda, which may be lost permanently. Nevertheless, Robert is telling us a chiddush from the whole aveda sachefa. Yeah. Then the Mishnah said, Matzah Chamor part of Cholov. We said that if you see, so we have two cases in the Mishnah. One was you saw a donkey or a cow grazing by the side of the road. The other is that you saw a cow running among the vineyards. So what about, so Hoggo for Kashi, you have a contradiction in the Mishnah. Amrit Matzah Chamor part of Roin Baderach Enzo Aveda. You say that if you see them grazing by the side of the road for up to 3 days, as we said, then it's not an Aveda, implying, implying if it's only grazing by the side of the road, sure, it's not an aveda. But what if it's, for example, running along the road, or it is grazing among the vineyards, among the vines? It sounds like it would be an aveda. The only case that would be not is if it's grazing peacefully by the side of the road. However, Ema safer, but then the next part, look at Chamur v'Kelev Afrokim, if you find a donkey with its gear on upside down, or Parah Rotha Ben Akramim, where you find a cow running along among the vineyards, Harezu Aveda, then is it an Aveda, implying Rotha Ben Akramim would have the Aveda, so if it's running among the vineyards, then it's an Aveda. Harotha Baderach, or if it's running along the road, V'Roya Ben Akramim, or if it's just peacefully grazing among the vineyards, Ainzer Aveda, so it's not. So what is it? So fine, we know Roya Baderach, we know Rotza Ben Akraman, those are the two extremes. What about the two possible middle cases where it's running, but it's on the road, not among the vineyards? It's grazing, but it's not by the road, it's in the vineyards. What would be the din in those cases? Amar Abaya, so Abaya says, quoting a Lashon HaPasuk as like a figure of speech, Yagid Olav Reyoy, its friend will tell about it. In context of the Pasuk is talking about thunder and lightning and rain, some of the Mephoshim say that Rei over there does mean a friend, like one fellow cloud to another. Mitzvah Tzion explains over there that Rei is Melosh Trua, Melosh the sound of thunder, whatever. In the Gemara, when it quotes these words, Yagid Olav Rei, it means it in the sense of let its friend tell about it. In other words, we have two statements in the Mishnah. One can teach us about the other. Namely, Tana Roya Baderach, so I have the Aveda. Namely, the Tana of the Mishnah teaches us a case where it's grazing by the side of the road, that's not an Aveda. But who Adin, La Roya Ben Akramim. Therefore, the implication is the same thing no matter where it's grazing. As long as it's grazing, that's enough.
And vice versa.
Tana Rotsa Ben Akramim, it says running along the vineyard, Dehavya Aveda, that is considered an Aveda. Therefore, the same would apply to running along the road. So yeah, the Mishnah only told us two cases out of the possible four, but we're meant to say one of them tells us something about the other. One of them tells us something.
Fine,
but if you're going to say that way, that each one is supposed to teach us about the other one, then why is the Mishnah telling us, the Mishnah should be telling us the more lenient one, and we ourselves, in each pair, and we ourselves could deduce the more chomer one. Namely, instead of saying roya baderech, which is not much chiddush, it's roya and it's baderech, there's no reason to think it's an aveda. Listen, rotza baderech, to have ya aveda, let it mention, or rather, not when it comes to rotza, instead of mentioning rotza ben akromim, that's running among the vines, where you have the problem also, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, it may get injured among the vines, besides the fact the vines themselves are going to get damaged. Instead, mention rotza baderech, to have ya aveda, the Mishnah should say that if it's running along the road, it's already an aveda. And how much more so if it's running among the vineyards where it's going to get hurt?
In general, they don't feed by the vineyards, right?
No, but they could. But yeah,
the grapes eat
they could eat the grasses that are growing there, whatever. Yeah. And similarly, the listener Roya ben Akromim Dolehavi Aveda. Similarly, the Mishnah could have told us a case where it's grazing among the vines, where even though it's among the vines, you would think therefore that's a problem. As the Gemara is going to tell us in a few lines. But it's grazing, so therefore tell us that's not an Aveda. Bekoshkin, Roya Baderach, and then we'd understand ourselves how much more so if it's grazing by the road where it's not hurting anybody. So it doesn't work to say Yagid Olavreya. Elo Amar Rava, so no, Rava says you have to understand the difference. Rotza ad Rotza Baikasha, the two cases of running are not a contradiction. It's true, the Mishnah tells us the case of it running among the vineyards, but there can be a case where it's running on the road and it's also considered an Aveda. Namely, Hada Apple Agabi Dabra, Hada Apple Agabi Masa. Depends whether its face is towards the wilderness, towards the out in the middle of nowhere, or whether it's running away from the city or towards the city, basically. If it's running towards the city, it's not an Aveda, because then it's running home. If it's running away from the city, that's an Aveda, even if it's not Ben Akram.
Yeah, but it doesn't live in the city, it lives in the field. So.
No, it grazes in the field during the day, but it comes home to its owner in the city every night.
Well, it's cow,
and its house walks around the streets of itself.
Yeah.
They know it'll go.
An ox instinctively knows its master. Yeah. So they know what their place is and tend to return to it. Not always, which is how sometimes they get lost. On a daily basis, usually it was a normal thing. You would send out your animals to graze, and then they would come home in the evening.
So we're teaching something new.
So there's that. And Roya, Roya Nam. And when it comes to grazing, there's also no contradiction. Because there's a difference whether you're talking the animal itself is lost or whether you're talking about the karka, that the vineyard is going to get damaged. If it's a matter of Aveda, namely like this. When the Mishnah tells us it's grazing by the side of the road, it's not an Aveda, and the implication we understand from that is it's grazing among the vineyards, it is an Aveda, that is talking about Aveda's karka. That's talking about a case where there's concern the vineyards themselves are going to get damaged, the vines themselves are going to get damaged. Therefore, forget about whether the animal itself is lost. You have an obligation to get the animal out of there so it doesn't ruin the vines. By the way, there was machlokas rishonim on the question, does that mean, we learned yesterday about the concept of ikisha chayaba, if you already hit the animal with a stick or otherwise make it move, even if it's anal of ikvoida, you're obligated to go finish the job of returning it. Does that apply over here also? One way of looking at it is, why wouldn't it apply? Because you moved it. Once you got it out of the vineyard, maybe you're
getting it, why are you taking it out? Because why are you even stop and get involved? Because it was ruining the vineyard.
Because it's ruining the vine.
Once you got the vine, you
so one way of looking at it is once you took it out of there, yes, you're obligated to bring it all the way back home. The other way of looking at it is no. In this case, you're only getting involved in order to save the vine. You're not concerned about the animal itself. Let's say the animal itself is not. The animal itself, you don't know if it's lost or not. You're just dealing with saving the vine, getting the animal out of it. Therefore, at that point, your job of Ashavas Aveda is finished. You saved the guy's vine from being damaged. What happens to the animal after that? Not your problem. It may or may not be an Aveda.
But are you taking it home, it might involve the whole year, right?
No, we're not talking taking it home. According to what Rashi says, you're obligated to remove it from the vineyard. But that could just mean you put it someplace outside the vineyard.
But in the case where it's actually lost,
in Ikisha, where you hit it, that's different, because then you started on the actual Hashavas Aveda of the animal itself.
You have to call it out.
So there, at that point, you have to take it home and call it out, et cetera.
And it becomes a whole year process.
Okay.
But it's not a case.
Right.
This case.
Yeah. Okay. Whereas when the Mishnah continues that if it's running among the vineyards, then it's an Aveda. Whereas the implication is grazing among the vineyards is not an Aveda. It's talking about the Aveda's Gufa. Then it's talking about, we're looking at it from the point of view, is the animal itself lost? Is the animal itself lost? And the difference is, the Rotsa Ben Akramim Misakra, if it's running among the vineyards, it is going to get hurt, because it's going to get tangled up in the vines and trip and whatever, or the vines themselves are going to brush against it or whatever, and then hurt it. Yeah. The Roya Ben Akramim Misakra, whereas if the animal is just grazing among the vineyards, it's not going to get injured. So therefore, that's the point. In other words, if it's just grazing among the vineyards, you shouldn't leave it there because the vines themselves are going to get damaged. However, your job is to take it out to make sure the vines don't get damaged. Once you do that, then
if it's running,
then already you have to be concerned about the animal itself.
And the vine.
That's the Gemara's next question. V'roya ben akramim, fine, let's take the case where it's grazing. Nihid lo misakra, fine, let's say it's not going to get injured. Typically, mishum avedas karka. Don't you have to take it out, as we just said, in order to save the vines from getting damaged?
Right.
The answer is v'dikusi. Yes, but we're talking about if the vineyard belongs to a goy. We established a number of times already, there's no mitzvah of ashavas aveda for a goy. Again, unless there's issues of kiddush Hashem or chilul Hashem or whatever involved. So therefore, that's it. Mitzad avedas karka, you don't have to deal with it. Only mitzad that it may, so mitzad the fact that it may ruin the vines, that's not your concern. The only concern is the animal itself going to get injured? If it's grazing quietly among the vines, it's not going to get injured.
How you know the Jewish cow or non-Jewish?
No, you don't know whether it's a Jewish cow, but you know whether it's a Jewish vineyard.
You know who's the local landowner.
If you don't know, then I guess it's off. Take it out. So the question is, fine, don't you have a different reason? You have to get the cow out of there. The goy is going to shoot it if you leave it over there. So that's reason alone. What?
Shoot animal, then you have to deal with stripping it out.
That's not the point. The point is, the goy doesn't want it. Nobody wants animals grazing among the vines and ruining them. If the goy sees the animal in there, he's going to shoot it. So what are we saying if the animal is grazing in there and it's a goy's vineyard, you don't have to worry about it? Why not? L'chora, you should have to take out the animal so it doesn't get killed. The answer is ba'asra de masru v'hadr kati. Yes, but we're talking about the kind of place where it's normal to give a warning before you kill. You know, this is the kind of thing that you see in all the old westerns and whatever. If your dog gets into my property again, I'll shoot. You know, whatever. So they warn first. Yeah.
So big sign.
Yeah.
He shouldn't hear.
No, that's the thing. That's the thing. What we're saying all this time, we're not dealing necessarily here, you don't know who the owner is. You do know who the owner is, let's say. That's the point. If the animal is running along among the vines, you have a responsibility to help get it out of there because otherwise it's going to trip on them and break its leg and then return it to its owner. We're talking about if the animal is grazing over there, so you know who the owner is, but the owner of the vineyard is a goy, so you're not obligated to worry about the damage to the vineyard. Therefore, if you know the goy is not going to shoot the animal without a warning to the owner first, fine, you're not responsible. But then at that point, the animal is not going to suffer.
By the way, stopping a running cow is not a simple thing.
Okay, whatever it takes. I don't know. I guess. Yeah. Okay, I guess you do. I don't know. Okay.
Oh,
the question.
Yeah.
I guess people knew how to handle them. I don't know. Okay. Question is, Viduma Astruba. Fine. How do you know? Maybe the owner of this vineyard, the Goyish owner of this vineyard, did already warn the owner one time. Yeah. The answer is E Astruba Veloy Zaharuba. Fine. But if the owner of the vineyard already gave a warning to the owner, and still he wasn't careful to keep his animal from getting into this vineyard again, Vade Aveda Midasi. Then there's no question at that point. It's an Aveda Midas. You another year have no further responsibility over it. We learned before about Aveda Midas, that Amma Mahol doesn't mean you're allowed to take it for yourself. It's not Hefker, but you're not obligated to do Ashavas Aveda on it anymore because the owner himself knows it's there. He knows, fine, he's being careless with it. He's being careless. You don't, on purpose, you don't have any further obligation.
Hours away, doesn't hear.
No, we're talking about that there was already a warning. He already received a warning. Keep your animal out of my vineyard or I'm going to shoot it. He didn't take care to make sure that his animal doesn't get in there again. At that point, it's his responsibility. So the Rambam learns doesn't mean you're allowed to take the animal for yourself, just means that you're not obligated in a Shavas Aveda. The Rosh learns it means you even be allowed to take it for yourself. At that point, we assume the owner is basically masculine.
At least take it out of the vineyard.
Well, again, if it's a goy's vineyard, you are not responsible to, but the owner, at that point, the owner, having been warned already, is the one who's responsible for it.
But it almost sounds similar to the case where you bring it back to the owner, and it's like three times, four times, five times, you have to keep bringing it back. You know,
right, but the difference is over there, you don't know whether the owner was careless again. Here, of all places, why is it in this guy's vineyard where he already threatened to shoot it, the owner has an extra responsibility. If he really wants to keep this animal, he has an extra responsibility to make sure
he left this field, he left the gate better. But
yeah, whatever.
Saying that the guy is
because Mela, if it gets lost, fine. You know, we'll do our Shabbos Aveda, but, you know, if it gets shot, then that's it. You know, it's going to be a goner, same. Then the Mishnah said, for that case, that if you returned it and it ran away, and you returned it and it ran away again, etc., we said you have to keep returning it. So one of the Rabbanon asked the Rabbah, Ema, how do you know that that's what it means? The Mishnah said, because it says Hoshev Teshiva. Who said? Ema Hoshev Chodazimna. Maybe the word Hoshev means you're obligated to return it one time. Teshiva means Trezim. It means you're obligated to return it a second time. And that's it. If it runs away a third time, it's not your concern anymore. Amalei, so Rabbah tells him, no, that's not how you understand. The word hoshev all by itself means even 100 times. The Rambam explains, because the word hoshev is an infinitive. It's like the word returning. It's a generic word. It's like the word returning in English. There's no indication of how many times or who's doing it or what have you.
Toshev
would mean you shall return it. Hoshev means a returning. There has to be a returning done, meaning as many times as necessary. To Shivim, and then when it continues to Shivim, we learn something else from it. Aimly Elulabe. So if you only had the word Hoshev, you would only know that you're allowed to return it to the guy's house. Legino Chobosiminayin. How do we know you're also allowed to return it to his garden or to his broken down ruin, which one day maybe he may reconstruct, and right now he uses it for storage or what have you? Therefore, the pasuk says to Shivim, meaning that in any case, as long as you're returning it to his property, then it's good enough. The question is, what kind of property is this? Heichidom. Idim Mintura. If this is the kind of place that's well guarded, where the animal is not going to easily get away from. By the way, you know, we learned the other day in the Machlokas of Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef, whether the Shomer Aveda is a Shomer Chinam or a Shomer Sachar. Here, the Gemara is just generically saying the Mintura, meaning according to the respective possibilities. If it's a Shomer Chinam, it has to be Mintura means guarded. If, according to Rabbi, it would have to be it's well guarded enough that there's not that it's not shia, that's not careless, that's not shia carelessness to leave it over there. According to Rabbi Yosef, it would have to be that safe from Gnei Vaveda over there. The Gemara is not getting into that detail because we can rely on that earlier machlokes to get that. Yeah. Anyway, pshita. Well, then obviously, why should the gina or the churva be any worse than his house if it's mintura, if it's well guarded? Idulai mintura, and if it's not someplace that's guarded where the animal is too easily going to get out or too easily going to get stolen or whatever, am I? Then why is he allowed to return it over there? The answer is la'olam de mintura. No, you are talking about it is someplace that's fairly well protected. Just the chiddush is the loy be'in and das b'ilei. That the chiddush is that you don't have to inform the owner when you return it to there. He doesn't have to tell him. Rashi says, look, your cow got away. I returned it to your garden. You have to keep an eye on it. You don't have to do that.
You want to get paid a salary for your...
Well, if you want to get paid, yeah, okay. But if you're just doing it for the mitzvah, yeah.
Sure.
Then you don't have to inform.
Why would you think you have to inform?
Because like Rabbi Loza says, in all cases where you're returning something, for example, Rashi says a ganav, a gazlan, a regular shomer, you always have to inform the owner, I return this thing. We learned at the end of Baba Kama, if you don't inform him, in fact, you're going to be chayav for whatever happens to it until the owner figures out that it's back. We talked over there about a case, for example, you stole from his purse and later on he counts his coins, you stole from his flock and afterwards he counts his flock, etc. We have all those cases. Because by saying Hoshev Teshivim, the Torah is teaching us that there's another kind of Hashavas Aveda, which is valid, namely without informing him. And that's what we learn from Ginosa and Chobasa. So the point is, you can return it to Ginosa or Chobasa, provided they're safe enough, the animal is not just going to run right back out, or get stolen, as the case may be, whatever. However, you don't have to inform the owner. When the owner himself comes to his Gino or his Korba, he'll find it himself.
If he was just returning it to his property or to his barn, he's not going to know that the guy even left, so he's not going to wash to make it walk.
That's the point. You're not obligated to inform him because
you want this behemoth to be safe. It shouldn't be going out every day over and over and over.
Fine, it's safe enough.
By the way, you should.
Okay, if you want to tell him, he's going to hate, but you're not obligated.
You're not negligent
if you don't. Right. Now, so since we did that, the Gemara is now going to start going through a lot of other cases in the Torah.
All the others we said.
Okay, there are Rishonim actually to learn that maybe by Shomrim you don't, maybe only by Gadam and Gazlan you need to. Okay, anyway. So now the Gemara is going to go through a whole bunch of other places in Chumash where we have a double expression like that and see what we dashing from it. Next one. The Pasuk says, by Shiloah, the mitzvah of Shiloah Akan, about sending away a mother bird before you take the babies. Shalach to Shalach. The Torah says you should send it away. And again, the Mishnah in Chulin tells at the end of Chulin, where it talks about this, the Zinim, says that if you sent away the mother bird and it returned before you had a chance to take the egg, you have to send it away again and again and again. There's no limit. So again, you would think, Ema Shalach Chodazim, that's Shalach Trezimni. Again, the Chachamim asked the Rabbah, maybe the word Shalach means one time and the Shalach means two times, and then that's it. Amalahu, and again, he answers them the same thing. Shalach Afila Meyapama Mashma. Shalach is an infinitive, therefore it means as many times as necessary.
Like
Hashem. Like Hashem, right. Shalach, sending. It has to be sent away, in other words, regardless. Tishalach, what do we learn from that? Eni elul dvar hershus. Because without the word tishalach, you would only know that the mitzvah of shaluach atan applies if you want the babies, the eggs, or the chicks for optional purposes, just to eat or whatever, or for pets. How do we know the same thing applies even if, for example, you need the baby, even, for example, you need it for mitzvah? For example, Rashi says, let's say, to be the tahar of a tzara. Part of the process is you need two birds where you shecht one of them and let the other one flee, etc. What if you need birds for mitzvah? How do we know the mitzvah of Shiloah HaKam still applies to that? Talmud Lomar with the shalach mekol makom. That is why the Torah has to say the shalach, meaning regardless. In all cases, you have this mitzvah.
You need birds.
For the Masada.
So you would keep them.
You would think, therefore, you can keep the mother and the baby.
No,
you can't. You still have to send away the mother and take the baby.
What's telling you 100 times? Shalach or Tishalach?
Shalach is telling you 100.
Tishalach
is teaching you, regardless, even if it's a place of a mitzvah, even if it's a case of a mitzvah, like for Masada, you still have to do the mitzvah of Shiloah HaKam.
Shalach is like Hashem.
Next, one of the Chachamim then asked Rava, what about the pasuk Hecheach Techeach? We're taught that Hecheach Techeach for the Meyapam. How do we know? Maybe Hecheach means one time and Techeach means twice. Amalei, that's what he says. Hecheach to the Kofam. Because each time we have to understand. First of all, each time we have to understand what the second word is going to teach us. But second of all, we're going to learn on
each time you have to understand
because
you each,
no, but what each time. So what does the Teshiva teach us? What does the Teshalach teach us? Each time, in order for it to work, it has to be that the second word is teaching us some extra thing, some extra detail about it. Besides which, we're going to learn on Amud Beis that there are Tanoim who don't hold of this, at least in some cases,
what
maybe
is
at all.
This principle
is it doesn't have a name. It's just the Torah. There's no extra word in the Torah. Therefore, we have to derive something from it. But we'll see. On Amud Beis, there was the other possibility. Divra Torah, Koloshim, and Adam. The Torah just speaks in common language. It was in modern languages, it's not. But in the times of the Torah, in the times when the Torah was given, it was a common thing.
Hashiv,
Tashiv, Tashiv, whatever. It was the usual way of saying you must do this.
What about Binyanah? Why can't you just a little one from the other?
First, again, because we're going to see on Amud Beis that there may be some that there are going to be some cases where there are going to be some cases where it may not apply. Besides, right, Binyanah is when you have a detail that applies by one mitzvah, we apply it to many others. Not always are we saying over here the double expression teaching us even 100 times.
Right.
Sometimes it can teach us something else.
Like
no, but that's you can't have that. That would be more like Xeta Shava, and you don't do Xeta Shava like that across separate words unless there's nothing else available to do Xeta Shava with. So, Amalei Hecheach Hafila Kofam Mashma. Again, the word Hecheach by itself means even 100 times. Techeach teaches us like this: Emi Elah Rav LaTalmid. From the word Hecheach, you would only know, for example, that a Rebbe has an obligation of Techecha to his Talmid. Talmud l'rav minayin. How do we know a Talmud has an obligation of teichecha, respectfully, of course, but still he has an obligation of teichecha to his Rebbe if he sees him doing something wrong? Talmud l'rav minayin, teichecha mekol makom. That is what the teichecha teaches us.
So it's not between two general people, it's only your rav and the
Talmud. Well, more generally, in other words, even somebody who you owe respect to, you still have to give them teichecha where it's appropriate. It's within Kiddushin. The form of it would be more of not you did X wrong, but rather, you know, doesn't it say in the Torah, didn't you teach us such and such? Learn about Tanur Rabbeinu, yeah.
Shouldn't that come before the Shiloh HaKan in terms of the Gorosh?
I don't know. I mean, we were kind of doing them out of order. I don't know. Okay, another one. Ozev Tazev Imai. The pasuk says by the mitzvah Prikor Teina, which we're going to start dealing with in more detail tomorrow. Prikor Teina is the mitzvah that when you see an animal overburdened and collapsing under its burden, you're obligated to help unload the animal and then reload it. The Torah talks about it in two places, in Parshas Mishpatim and in Parshas Kiteite. We're going to learn tomorrow that one of those cases is talking about the mitzvah of prika, of unloading the animal, and the other one is talking about the mitzvah of ke'ina, helping to reload it properly. So the Torah says, ozev in both places, in one place, in Mishpatim, it says ozev tazavim, right? Help, you should help with him. So what do we learn from that? We don't learn that you have to. We are going to talk about that you have to do it again and again, but that's not what we're learning from it here. It is. It's like this. So yeah, ozev teaches us even 100 times. Tazev is like this. Ainli ala ba'olavim, right? You would only know from the word ozev that the mitzvah only applies if the owner is there, and Tosfos says on a mitzvah and available to help. And able to help, that is, he's not old or what have you. In Bailavimimimimimimim, what if the owner is not there, meaning according to Tosfos, he's physically there, but he's not capable of helping? The Rosh explains differently. The Rosh explains literally means he's not there, whatever. How do we know? Talmud Lama, Ozer Tazev, become welcome, therefore the Pasuk says Tazev, meaning regardless, you're obligated to help. Another case, when it says Hokim Tokimim, when it says you should help the animal up with him, this is talking about Te'ina, this is talking about the mitzvah of reloading up the animal. Again, why the double expression? Same thing. You would only know from that if the owner is there and available and unable to help. Shein bolavim u'nayin. How do we know even if the owner is not able to help or not there, as the case may be? Tamad lai mahakam takam makam lachim. So now
that traditionally the motion is not.
We'll see on Amud Bey. Wait, it's not so simple. There are tanoim we'll learn differently. Now the question becomes, why indeed does the Torah have to tell us separately about unloading and about reloading the animal? L'chora, you could learn one from the other. As a matter of fact, actually, maybe you could learn them all from the concept of Hashavas Aveda, that you're obligated to do something to save the other guy's property. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos learns the real question is not, you do need each one separately. In fact, they have somewhat different dinim, as we're going to learn when we start on the sugya of Prika and Tina in the middle of the Mishnah tomorrow. But the real question is, Tosfos says, given that we have a limud by one of them, that if the owner is not available to help, then you still have to help, why does the Torah need to tell us the same thing by the other case?
Unloading is in pain.
Well, that's the answer. The answer is seriously, we need both of them. Because Rahman of Prika, because if the Torah only mentioned the case of unloading, you would think there's two things, two factors why you need to help, regardless. Number one, because it's Tzah Balachayim, the animal is suffering. And number two, because there's going to be a loss if the animal is eventually going to break down or die or whatever if you don't unload it. When it comes to reloading the animal, there's not really any tzah balachayim. There's a slight tzah balachayim because the animal is just sitting there with nothing to do, but nothing major. And there's no major chisorin kis. Again, you know, eventually there'll be a chisorin kis, sure, because the guy won't have any way to get his merchandise to wherever it is. But still, we're not talking at the moment a major chisorin kis. Aim a life. You would think maybe not. Maybe you wouldn't have a mitzvah, according to Rashi, maybe you wouldn't have a mitzvah to in at all. But according to Tosfos, maybe you wouldn't have to do it if the owner is not able to help. The Eshmin and Tina, conversely, if the Torah only told us in the case about reloading the animal, you would say Mishul Debeschar. Yes, but the difference is, as we're going to learn tomorrow, when it comes to Tina, when it comes to reloading the animal, you're entitled to get paid for it. Unlike unloading the animal, where you're obligated to do it for free, reloading the animal, you're entitled to demand payment from the owner. So if you only knew about Tina, you would say, okay, well, since you're getting paid for it, fine, then therefore you have an obligation to do it, and even if the owner can't help himself. I have a prika de bechinam, but when it comes to prika, where you're obligated to do it for free, aim a law, you would think maybe not. Tzricha, and that is why we need both cases. Question is, fine, what about, we're going to learn, according to Rav Shimon, he says that Te'ina also has to be done for free. According to him, you could learn both of them are for free. So you could learn one from the other. Why do we need both of them? The answer is, Rav Shimon loy mesai mikroi. True, but according to Rav Shimon holds, unlike the Chachamim, who say that it's clear from the Pesukim that one of them, the one in Mishpatim, is talking about unloading the animal, and the one in Kisete is talking about reloading it, Rav Shimon says it's not clear which one is which. Therefore, if the Torah only told us one of them, you would think it's either Prika, you would think, for example, it's only Prika on the grounds that we said Tzah Balachayim or whatever, and therefore you're not obligated to Ina, or vice versa. You wouldn't know both of them necessarily. Therefore, you need two separate sets of
results.
It doesn't say in so many words, unload and reload. In the one case, it says Ozev Tazev, you should help. In the other case, it says Hokim Tokim, you should help get the animal back up. So that could be either one. Could be Rav Shimon said either one could be understood as helping by unloading or helping by reloading. Okay. Getting it back up by unloading or getting it back up with its load. So you can't tell. Rav Shimon says.
Repeating it twice, then you cover both.
Then that means, no matter what, regardless which one means which, either way, you're covered.
Would be
fancy.
Yeah.
Okay, so now the question.
Why talk him to unload?
Because right now the animal is collapsing under its burden, and when you unload it, it'll be able to lift itself back up.
And then you have to
help him reload it. So according to Rav Shimon, you can't tell. We'll learn about that more tomorrow, Mr. Shem. Next, Lomali the Mikhtav Hani Tauti, Lomali the Mikhtav Aveda. Okay, now here's the question. So why does the Torah need to tell us these two dinim of Prika and Tina, as well as Hashavas Aveda? Again, Rashi says all of them have to do with saving another yid's money. So therefore, let the Torah tell us one of them, and we'll deduce the other ones from it. The answer is Tuti. We still need all of them. Because Rahmana Hani Tauti, because if the Torah only mentioned Prika and Te'ina, you would say, without an Anah HaShavah Saveda, Mishum Tzayri the Mori Ika Tzayri the Doisa. Because in the case of Prika and Te'ina, there is involved the Tzayr of the owner. He's standing over there without being able to unload or reload the animal. And there's the Tzayr of the animal itself, that to begin with, it's collapsing under the burden, and afterwards it's standing there with nothing to do. Aval Aveda, but when it comes to a lost object or a lost animal, the tsaira de mora isa. Now it's true the owner has tsaira that he lost this thing. The tsaira de dolasa, but the animal is not having any tsaira. It's having a grand old time going out there and grazing. And if it's an inanimate object, obviously it has no tsaira. Emaloi, then you would think maybe not. The iashmin and aveda. On the other hand, if the Torah only told us the mitzvah of hashavas aveda, you would say mishum de lesa mora bada. Yes, but the difference is, sure, the owner is not there now because by definition it's an aveda. The owner is not there. But the other two cases, Prikotina, where the owner is there, so Emalo, you would think maybe not. Maybe you should say, look, the owner himself is there. Why am I obligated to help him for free? Or to Ina, let him do it himself, or if he can't do it himself, let him hire people to do it. Why do I have to bother? And therefore, Tzricha, therefore, the Torah has to tell us the active. Okay. Now for some other case. It's not really the Nimishur's idea. The Torah is telling you you have to do it. The Torah is telling you have to do it, yeah. Now let's go through some other examples where the Torah gives a double expression and what we learn from it. Number one, the Pasuk says, by a Ritzeach, Mois Yumas Hamakeh, the one who killed somebody else, it put to death, he shall be put to death. Now obviously there doesn't mean I feel a mayor palm because he didn't kill him 100 times. So what does it teach us? It means, Ainli Elaba Misak Suvabai, because if it only said the word Mois, you would only know that you can kill him, whether it was based in or whether it's the Goyal Adam, can only kill him by the prescribed method, namely the prescribed method of Mrs. based in is Sayyid, is the sword. It's chopping off his head. Minayin Shin Iyata Yochala Misid Misak Suvabai Shatter Rashola Misid Bhom Misa Shati Yochala Misid. How do we know, suppose it's impossible to kill him with that type of thing? Let's say, for example, Rashi says he's escaping on a ship, so you can't kill him by the sword, but you can shoot an arrow and kill him. How do we know that you can still do that? Tamalama Mois you must become Mokam, therefore it says Mois you must teach us regardless. Next.
So we have the four ways of
The four ways, but again, with a Ritzeach and also the next. With a Ritzeach, it's supposed to... No, you have the normal things are skilos shefer head and the chenek. But the standard punishment for a Ritzeach is sayyid. Ordinarily, you're not allowed to do anything else. You're not allowed to take somebody who's chayef skila and give him a different misa. But in this case, a Ritzeach is an exception, as we're also going to talk about another exception. There's three exceptions in total. Ritzeach, we're going to say now Irei Zachas, and then there's a third one. What is the third one? Edim Zomimin, I think. Those are the only three that I think Sadim Zomim, I don't remember for sure. Those are the only, Tosfos actually, and in Marcus points out, because we have by those three specifically, where it tells us this expression that they're to be killed regardless in whatever way possible, therefore we learn that's not true of other Chayv and Mrs. Beis Din. You don't have, for example, let's say somebody broke Shabbos and is Chayv Skila, but he's escaping on a boat, and the only way to kill him is by shooting an arrow at him, you can't do that. Only by these three. You have to let him go, yeah. Next, only by Ritzeach, by Irei Nidachas, and I think the third one is Edim Zomim. I don't remember for sure.
When did they say broiler meets a yuppie?
Ordinarily, broiler meets a yuppie. Choose for him the easiest possible death. If the Torah, the easiest way of doing the death penalty, the Torah says, yeah, but in these cases, the Torah is telling you most yumos, or hake sake, meaning regardless, yeah. So that's the next one. Hake sake, the Pasuk says, by an Irei Nidachas, you should strike it, you shall strike it. Again, in the Elabach Cox of Ben, if you only had the word hake, you would only know. Again, Irani Dachas is also punishable by Sayif. They're also punishable by being executed by the sword. You would only know that that applies. Minayin Shem Iyaki Yochal Amis and Bakoach Sobe. And how do we know that if you can't kill them in that prescribed way, Shapir Ashoy Lakos and Macholakal Shapir Yochal, that you're allowed to kill them with any way possible? Tamavoy Mahake Sakim and Kolakim, that is why it says the double expression.
Russia or
Mitzvah? Russia. Maybe it's a Mitzvah, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, at the very least, you're able to. You don't say that if you can't do science, then you don't do anything.
Well, these are people you're not allowed to have money on them or anything.
This is true. Okay. Yeah, fair enough. Okay. Another one. Hoshev Toshev. The Torah tells us, the Mitzvah of Irani Dachas. The Saudi Arabians aren't following something that the Abishta gave to the entire nation. Yeah. You know, they're fine. You know, Lahavdil, Lahavdil, just because the Goyim do a certain kind of thing doesn't automatically put it off limits to us. If the Torah specifically tells us to do something, it doesn't matter what the Goyim do.
Yeah. It may never happen.
It happened in cases of misunderstanding, but whatever. What the Goyim do is neither here nor there. Well, actually, we'll learn a little bit about that in Sanhedrin, actually, about when we talk about the Din of Sayyid. We'll talk about it there, the Huda's opinion, but we'll get to that eventually. That he says that the Tanakhama over there says that the Misa of Sayyid is supposed to be done the way the Roman government does, chop the guy's head off of with a sword. Rabbi Yehuda says that that's not the right way to do it. You shouldn't be doing like the Goyim do. And rather he gives a different way. You have the guy lay down his head on a block and you chop it off an axe. And the Chacham say that's a nivel, that's a degrading way to kill him. Doesn't matter that the Goyim do it the same way as we do. Doesn't matter. That doesn't change the halacha. Okay, anyway. The pasuk is Hoshev Toshev. The pasuk says, as far when you take a mashkin from somebody, when you take a collateral from somebody for a debt, if he's poor and he needs it during the day or during the night, you're obligated to return it to him every day or every night. We're going to learn the details about that towards the end of the Masechta. We're going to learn about the details of it in great detail. So the pasuk also uses a double expression, Hoshev Toshev. What do we learn from that? You would only know if you only had the word Hoshev that only applies if you took the Mashkin with the permission of Beis Din, meaning Rashi says that you took him to Beis Din, and Beis Din sent a Shliach to go and take some of the Talpulin from the guy, which is the only way that you're allowed to do it. How do we know that the same din applies even if you took it from him without the Rishos of Beis Din? You still have the mitzvah of returning it every day or every night. That is why it says Hoshev Toshev, meaning regardless, you still have the mitzvah.
So you could take the
let's say you took as a mashkin a pair of pajamas. So you could keep it by you every day, and by night you have to return it to him. And then keep on going as long as necessary. We'll learn in the last parak in that case what's the point of taking it, not the last, the next last parak. We'll talk about what's the point of taking a mashkin in that case. Whatever, we'll get there in due time. That's the shem. Couple of months. That's the shem. Another one, Chovel Tachbol. Another one, the Torah talks about at a different place in Parshas Mishpatim, about if you take something as security. Again, Emil Shemishkin Abirshus. Again, you would only, and again, the Torah says you have to return it to him every night. And Rashi points out that Tachbol is a stronger expression than Mashkin. A Mashkin could be something that even the guy gives you willingly or whatever. A Chavolah implies something where you actually had to go, where you actually had to forcefully take it. A regular person, Rashi says, would not have the chutzpah to do it. Necessarily, that means the Shliach faced it. However, still, Ein Li'ela Shemishkin Abirshus, still, if you had only Chavol Tachbol, you would only know that it applies if you took it with the Rishus of the guy. Mishkin Eshel Abirshus Minayin, how do we know the same din applies even if you took it without a Rishus, even though it's a chutzpahdika thing to do? Nevertheless, let's say you did it. Tamad Lema Chavol Tachbol Bekal Mokim, nevertheless, Tachbol still teaches it that you still have the same mitzvah of returning. The question is, Vahani Tre Kroy Lomali, fine, why do you need two psukim, Hoshev Toshev and Chavol Tachbol? Chadlik Susya and Chadlik Sus Laila. One teaching you that if you took a garment that is worn by day, then you have to return it every morning. And the other one teaches you if it's a garment for night, then you have to return it to him every night. Another one, Pasayach Tiftach. The Pasuk says, open you shall open. As far as giving tzedakah, you have to open your hand for tzedakah. Why the double expression? Ainli el laniyah yircha. You would only know if you have the word Pasayach that only applies to the poor people of your city. Laniyah yircheres minayin. How do we know it also applies to the poor people of another city? So I'm going to Pasayach Tiftach mekomot. And similarly, another one, Nosein Titein, a few psukim later, it says, give, you shall give, also as far as tzedakah. Why is that? Ein li ela matana meruba, because if you only have the word Nosein, you would think that if you're able to give a large gift, then you have a mitzvah of giving tzedakah. Matana mu'etis minayin, how do we know even a matana mu'etis? So Rashi says, let's say you can't afford a matana meruba. Let's say all you can afford is a dollar. how do we know you still have a mitzvah tzedakah to give that dollar?
Obvious. I mean,
not
you
necessarily.
Don't have the money.
No,
you can't afford it yourself.
That's the point. Well, how do we know? A dollar is not really going to help the guy so much. You'd need a lot of money to help him.
But you don't have it.
So that's the point. Maybe you don't have a mitzvah tzedakah at all then. I'm a blame nothing chicken mekom makom. Nevertheless, nothing chicken regardless, even if it's only a small amount. That is also true, right? That is also true. The point is, even if all you can afford is a small amount, give that also, and that's also your mekayim tzedakah.
And therefore, the poor has that obligation too.
Indeed. There is actually a halacha. Even a person will learn in the Baba Basra when we learn about the Soviet tzedakah over there in the first paragraph, that even a poor person
that's
is obligated to give tzedakah. Yeah.
Right.
It's related to this. Yeah. I think we'll have to stop here and finish it off tomorrow, and then tomorrow, Bez Hashem, we'll talk about the Divrei Torah for Lashon Be'al of angle on it. Because there's not really a chiddush in that. I mean, if you have a poor person, if he's poor again and again, fine, of course. And if you have 100 different poor people, of course you have to give him again and again, right?